This episode was originally recorded in early 2020.
We need to free up time from prospecting if our business is going to grow.
I see the go-to strategy for this is actually time blocking.
One of the best things I ever did was turn off notifications on my phone.
Welcome to the Bright House Financial Insights Panel Podcast. In these monthly conversations, leading experts share actionable tips and strategies to help financial professionals like you build strong businesses and lasting relationships with clients.
Hello, I'm your host, Stephen Boswell, president of the Oxley Institute, a provider of marketing solutions for financial professionals.
Today, we are kicking off a four-part series on next-level prospecting strategies. Financial professionals are always looking for ways to build on their existing expertise to grow their businesses. So over the next four episodes, our panel of experts will be sharing their own experiences, as well as actionable, repeatable strategies that make the best use of resources and build fast client connections. First up, maximizing your prospecting methods and routines.
Time management is one of those topics that can seem rather vanilla, but it's really important for those wanting to maximize the amount of time they get to spend with their best clients and with prospecting. And I can say I spend most of my day every day talking with financial professionals, and it's extremely rare to hear someone say, "I've got all the time in the world, just tell me how to fill it." It's usually the opposite. They have no shortage of ideas on how to improve their business if only they had more time to take action.
Joining me today is behavioral finance expert Preet Banerjee, consultant to the wealth management industry, and prospecting expert Mary Beth Kuzmeski, the founder of Red Zone Marketing.
Mary Beth, I know you've worked with countless teams over the years, and I'm curious from what you've seen, how does a team help a financial professional stay on track during the day?
I see the go-to strategy for this is actually time blocking. So if you say, I want to reach out to centers of influence, you put a 30-minute block on your calendar and it actually works. One of the most important things is having your team back you up on it and not override it or say, oh, you don't have to do that. We have a financial professional that was really struggling with his time management. And so his team actually worked with him to block all of the time out. Every minute of his day was blocked out. Now, you might think that that sounds kind of terrible, but the free time was blocked out. The lunch was blocked out. The prospecting time was blocked out. If it is not blocked out, we will find distractions to do. But in this particular case, the staff took charge of it and then held him to it.
So when we look at what we're trying to free up time for, it all comes back down to the prospecting. How do we free up time for some activities that don't take a lot of time, really? I mean, we're talking about prospecting time blocks. You don't need more than 30 minutes or an hour. I had a call with a top 10 financial professional at a major firm, and his action items from the previous call were to make 5 calls into people who he wanted to do some business with. 2 weeks later, we get on the phone, and I ask him, how did it go with those 5 calls? And he said, Stephen, I just didn't have time for it. I had to fly out. I had to get to this meeting. And I said, let me ask you a question. How long does it take to make 5 phone calls? And he sits there, and it's one of the reasons why getting your team involved is so helpful, accountability. But it also tells you it doesn't take a whole lot of time to do some of our most important actions.
Yeah, and I think that really speaks to the power of time blocking. If you set aside that time that says, this is the block of time that I'm going to perform this very specific task, you have something that is measurable, that is providing you with accountability, and then you can go back and say, well, did I do what I was supposed to do in that half hour or not? But I also wanted to talk about distractions. One of the best things I ever did was turn off notifications on my phone. And when I am in the middle of a task, there is nothing more distracting than a notification and the time it takes to recover from that distraction. Once you're out of the zone, your effectiveness goes down. And something that would have taken a half an hour can end up taking 3 or 4 hours if you have all those distractions. It really comes down to efficiency.
Well, and I always say, you know, ask a financial professional, are you really listening to your prospects? Are you really listening to the people you're talking to? Oh, yes, yes, of course. When you're talking on the phone, do you also have your email open? Because if you have your email open, you're probably looking at it, and are you really listening? And not only are we distracted, but they're distracted. And so we have to just be able to put those things away so that we give undivided time to the people that we're actually speaking to.
I'll tell you, here's a quick tip, tomato timing. So this is a protocol that is used by a lot of doctoral researchers that I talk to, and they say, this is how you manage your time. It's basically a website that you go to, and it will block your time for you. So you click a button and it starts a 25-minute countdown. And after those 25 minutes, you've got 5 minutes that you can do whatever you want. Check Twitter, check email. But once that 5 minutes is over, you go back to your tomato time and you're focused on your task. I use that website all the time and it has made my productivity shoot through the roof.
Yeah, I think we all have little hacks. I can think of a financial professional who knew himself to be a very distracted person by nature. And he said the key to him was spending 5 minutes in the lobby before he went upstairs just to get his game plan together. There are studies on top of studies and books on top of books that can tell you how to run your business differently, but change is hard. Mary Beth, why do you think it's hard to get financial professionals to make the right changes to their business?
Well, there are so many things that financial professionals have to do in their day. We've got compliance, and they've got staff issues, and they've got mounds of emails. And the reality is, change is hard, but look at your priorities first. What do we really want to accomplish? Am I doing that for my clients? We've got one financial professional we work with, and he was just struggling with his time management. And we got him focused not on the day-to-day things that he wasn't going to do or could do. We got him focused on thinking about the priorities. What do you want to do? Why have you not done the things that you've always said you want to do? You got to decide that you're going to do it and stick to it and get your team behind you. Change is not easy, but change is often good.
Yeah, it's all about having the desire, right? If you really want to get in shape and exercise, you'll figure out a way to do it. And the same with growing the business.
Wait, is that true? A lot of people have trouble, like myself, of sticking to an exercise plan, but certainly the motivation is there.
Preet, I recently read about Quitter's Day. This is the second Friday of the new year. It's the date by which most people have given up on their New Year's resolutions. And how do we know that? It's because of the activity tracking app Strava that can look into our exercise patterns. They know when our activities drop, and it's that second Friday. I'm curious, Preet, with your background on the mind, what's the key to sticking with a new activity game plan?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with whether we're looking at incentivizing behaviors or taking a stick approach. So there's the carrot versus the stick. There was an economist, Dean Carlin, who was studying the use of commitment contracts, specifically with increasing the savings rate for people who are on the lower end of the income spectrum. He realized, well, you know, there's applications to people like myself as well. A commitment contract works like this. You find an accountability partner who will hold you to task. You decide on a specific and measurable goal that is relatively short-term in nature, and then you need to pick a penalty, right? So this is the opposite of an incentive. You need to pick a penalty. Usually it's suggested to be, you know, a financial penalty, something that you're going to feel a bit of a sting. But here's the real twist. It can't just be money that you say, well, I'm just going to give it to my accountability partner. It's got to be, you have to give it to something or someone you hate. And if you do that, the disincentive is so strong that it is actually going to make it more likely that you're going to stick to that goal that you set out. There is actually a website that Dean Carlin founded called stick.com, S-T-I-C-K-K. And I know there are a lot of financial professionals who actually use stick.com with some of their clients because part of being a financial professional is behavior modification, getting people to save more money, getting an insurance portfolio, getting their estate plan set up because everyone drags their heels getting a will and powers of attorney. And so some professionals will use stick.com to create some kind of penalty and commitment contract with their clients.
Preet, I'm curious from your perspective. I know the easy advice sometimes is telling a financial professional what to do more of. And that's not always the answer. It's harder sometimes to tell them what they should stop doing. What activities should financial professionals eliminate or spend less time on, at least?
Well, this is going to sound somewhat paradoxical, but generating giant financial plans for everybody as the standard actually may not be in the best interest when it comes to time management. I own a company called Money Gaps, which provides software that does light financial planning. And before we wrote a line of code, we hired an innovation lab to pick apart the client-advisor relationship. And we asked both parties, what are the things that you like about the relationship? What are the things that you don't like? And one of the biggest common pain points identified, not everybody reads financial plans. A big financial plan has its time and place. But there are a lot of people who said, you know what, I need a synopsis. And so you can save a lot of time by just presenting the report card, as we call it, that identifies the big things that they need to consider, how they're doing compared to other people like them. And then if they are ready and willing to engage in a deeper process, you can go ahead and do that. But not everyone should de facto get the full big financial plan right away. They may not even really receive it that well.
And I'm sure client size has something to do with it. Some clients have more complexity and may need more robust planning. But client personality matters too. You could have some clients like me who are more of a driver and want that quick, fast information, who would look at that big plan and think, I don't need all of that.
Right.
And I'm sure you have some others who are more engineer-minded who would say, where's all the details in this two-page plan?
Absolutely, yeah. There's multiple levels of segmenting that you can do. And I know that a lot of financial professionals will say, hey, you know what? With people over a certain level of assets, they get this tier of service. And for smaller client households, maybe they get a reduced sort of service level. And what we found is that there are a lot of people who are making good money, but they don't have assets yet, but they want some type of financial planning. And so creating a model where you can have a higher volume, more efficient practice not only helps you set yourself up for the future, because these will become great, fantastic clients down the road who at some point will need the deep financial planning engagement process, but allows you to make sure that you're not spending too much time there when you don't need to.
When we look at the rationale behind all of this, we need these mind games like stick.com. We need the accountability partner in our office. We need activity tracking to help us all stay accountable for things that we know we ought to be doing, whether it be exercise or business building or any activities that we know are good for us in the long term. Thanks for joining us, Preet and Mary Beth, and thank you for your insights. Make sure to join us for the next episode. We'll be talking about strategies for making fast connections with niche client groups.
Stay ahead of the curve with the Insights panel from Brighthouse Financial. This information is brought to you courtesy of Brighthouse Financial Incorporated, which provides, through its affiliates, annuities and life insurance products issued by Brighthouse Life Insurance Company, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28277, and in New York only by Brighthouse Life Insurance Company of New York, New York, 10017. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers, and the information presented is for educational purposes only. Speakers were compensated for their participation as subject matter experts, for professional use only, not for public distribution. In these podcasts, the terms advisor and financial advisor are used as general references to licensed insurance professionals and are not intended to indicate whether the licensed insurance professional is a registered investment advisor or is otherwise authorized under the law to provide financial advice. Brighthouse Financial Incorporated is not affiliated with nor endorses any businesses or organizations that appear in this material.